Welcome to the Spiritual Involution. It's just Katie right now. I wanted to read you a journal post that I did yesterday, and I had a very, I don't know if I want to say weird, interesting experience while writing it, so I wanted to share. I titled it A Bird's Message, and you will see why by the end. I can hear the birds outside right now. So when I say we are one, it doesn't mean that we are all the same. I'm not advocating we melt together into one homogeneous blob. What I truly mean is that, like different cells within a body operating to keep the whole balanced and healthy, we too all hold a unique place in keeping our planet balanced and healthy. We do not exist outside of the complex, intertwined whole of nature. Through understanding our truest self, we will ultimately become the healthiest cell for the body of our planet to thrive with. All of us carry necessary gifts to offer the well-being of our planet and perhaps the whole universe, if Mother Earth herself is then part of keeping an even bigger whole balanced. Just like with cells in our body, when one becomes ill, it may affect other cells around it and can cause the whole system to crumble. I am thinking that human beings become a contagious disease when we have not resolved our trauma, and so we exist internally in a state of constant imbalance ourselves. When we do not see that our imbalance has an effect on the whole, we become isolated. An isolated, imbalanced soul is our biggest challenge to overcome. We all carry trauma. Not one of us has escaped this truth. Not only personal trauma of this lifetime, but we also carry the trauma of our ancestors. The trauma of our ancestors being passed on to us is now being proven by science, but my heart already feels this truth deeply. We all carry the weight of what our ancestors either would not or could not let go of. This, my friends, is where our work needs to happen. I had a vision of our ancestors whispering in my ear, telling me, it's time. It's time to take their pain. It's time to take their pain that they've carried for lifetimes and put it back into Mother Earth and let new life begin again. Here, I believe, is the way forward. To heal, however, to move forward, we must first witness one another. No excuses or saying the word but. We just sit and witness. We stand witness to the trauma of our African American brothers and sisters. They are feeling every time a new horrific act arises that reopens wounds that are so deep and fresh in our history, they still need gentle tending to. Just like a rape victim who sits alone with her fear and pain, she cannot heal alone in isolation. Being seen in and of itself begins the healing process. We, my friends, seem to have a hard time just witnessing one another without adding on stipulations, caveats, or getting defensive. Lead with our hearts, and sometimes words don't even need to be said. This is about giving space to another to be seen, heard, and ultimately deeply loved. Our ancestors truly are asking us to heal. We need profound healing so we can move forward into a higher place vibrationally. We must get here. It's our only way through this. So I heard a meditation guru yesterday named Emily Fletcher, and she spoke about three levels. These levels are creation, maintenance, and destruction. And as I wrote that word destruction yesterday in my journal, a bird flew into my window and died. I'm going to get back to this bird because I decided to bury her, and I said a prayer over her, and she became a symbol as I wrote this. So that's why this is called a bird's message. But let's get back to creation, maintenance, and destruction. Creation is the state that we, or life, thrives in. A state of moving water, flow, and stimulation. This phase is beautiful, and it calls all of life to partake in it. Then there is this maintenance phase. This phase tries to maintain perhaps a desired state that the creation phase resulted in. We cling on and try to hold on to the good things because, well, it's stable and consistent. Nature eventually sees this state as stagnant water and will bring about the destruction phase. This phase stirs things up in ways that feel, so uncomfortable. This phase is often chaotic, messy, and painful. But from this phase comes the life of creation once again. And here is where we elevate and move into new energy. So we, my friends, are in the destruction phase now. And in order to get to the creation phase, we must witness our trauma. And we must all forgive one another. But forgiveness can only happen after the witness. We must all come face to face with the deep, disturbing truths our soil holds, and let our hearts then open to the experience of others with no judgment attached. Forward with love, my friends. So back to the bird. When that bird hit my window, I went outside and I buried him, and I wrote the following words. To fly must be the most freeing feeling. Above all things, you rise. But today, you fell upon my feet, whose wings were broke on a window through which I see more clarity. I will place you back to her in the soil from which you came. I will place my love upon you that you may rise again, as life will come from the story, from your story, little bird. You have made a difference already. May creation rise. So I leave you with this, and I hope you all have a beautiful day. Love you. Welcome to the Spiritual Involution. It's just Katie right now. I wanted to read you a journal post that I did yesterday. And I had a very, I don't know if I want to say weird, interesting experience while writing it. So I wanted to share. I titled it A Bird's Message, and you will see why by the end. I can hear the birds outside right now. So when I say we are one, it doesn't mean that we are all the same. I'm not advocating we melt together into one homogeneous blob. What I truly mean is that, like different cells within a body operating to keep the whole balanced and healthy, we too all hold a unique place in keeping our planet balanced and healthy. We do not exist outside of the complex, intertwined whole of nature. Through understanding our truest self, we will ultimately become the healthiest cell for the body of our planet to thrive with. All of us carry necessary gifts to offer the well-being of our planet and perhaps the whole universe, if Mother Earth herself is then part of keeping an even bigger whole balanced. Just like with cells in our body, when one becomes ill, it may affect other cells around it and can cause the whole system to crumble. I am thinking that human beings become a contagious disease when we have not resolved our trauma. And so we exist internally in a state of constant imbalance ourselves. When we do not see that our imbalance has an effect on the whole, we become isolated. An isolated, imbalanced soul is our biggest challenge to overcome. We all carry trauma. Not one of us has escaped this truth. Not only personal trauma of this lifetime, but we also carry the trauma of our ancestors. The trauma of our ancestors being passed on to us is now being proven by science, but my heart already feels this truth deeply. We all carry the weight of what our ancestors either would not or could not let go of. This, my friends, is where our work needs to happen. I had a vision of our ancestors whispering in my ear, telling me, "It's time. It's time to take their pain. It's time to take their pain that they've carried for lifetimes and put it back into Mother Earth and let new life begin again. Here, I believe, is the way forward. To heal, however, to move forward, we must first witness one another. No excuses or saying the word but. We just sit and witness. We stand witness to the trauma of our African American brothers and sisters. They are feeling every time a new horrific act arises that reopens wounds that are so deep and fresh in our history, they still need gentle tending to. Just like a rape victim who sits alone with her fear and pain, she cannot heal alone in isolation. Being seen in and of itself begins the healing process. We, my friends, seem to have a hard time just witnessing one another without adding on stipulations, caveats, or getting defensive. Lead with our hearts, and sometimes words don't even need to be said. This is about giving space to another to be seen, heard, and ultimately deeply loved. Our ancestors truly are asking us to heal. We need profound healing so we can move forward into a higher place vibrationally. We must get here. It's our only way through this. So I heard a meditation guru yesterday named Emily Fletcher, and she spoke about three levels. These levels are creation, maintenance, and destruction. And as I wrote that word destruction yesterday in my journal, a bird flew into my window and died. I'm going to get back to this bird because I decided to bury her, and I said a prayer over her, and she became a symbol as I wrote this. So that's why this is called a bird's message. But let's get back to creation, maintenance, and destruction. Creation is the state that we, or life, thrives in, a state of moving water, flow, and stimulation. This phase is beautiful, and it calls all of life to partake in it. Then there is this maintenance phase. This phase tries to maintain perhaps a desired state that the creation phase resulted in. We cling on and try to hold on to the good things because, well, it's stable and consistent. Nature eventually sees this state as stagnant water and will bring about the destruction phase. This phase stirs things up in ways that feel, so uncomfortable. This phase is often chaotic, messy, and painful. But from this phase comes the life of creation once again. And here is where we elevate and move into new energy. So we, my friends, are in the destruction phase now. And in order to get to the creation phase, we must witness our trauma. And we must all forgive one another. But forgiveness can only happen after the witness. We must all come face to face with the deep, disturbing truths our soil holds, and let our hearts then open to the experience of others with no judgment attached. Forward with love, my friends. So back to the bird. When that bird hit my window, I went outside and I buried him, and I wrote the following words. To fly must be the most freeing feeling. Above all things, you rise. But today, you fell upon my feet, whose wings were broke on a window through which I see more clarity. I will place you back to her in the soil from which you came. I will place my love upon you that you may rise again, as life will come from the story, from your story, little bird. You have made a difference already. May creation rise. So I leave you with this, and I hope you all have a beautiful day. Love you.
Hello, Katie.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm well and very peaceful. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I am slightly worried this podcast might not go smoothly, but I'm going to
Are there kids in the background?
There's kids in boxes in the front yard. They wanted to make these forts, and I told them if they need anything to go to John, but we'll see how that works.
for now they're appeased. I'm like, do you need anything before I get on the podcast? They're both like, we want pillows. I'm like, you could get your own pillow. I mean, do you need? So I don't know. But welcome to the spiritual involution.
And for those of you for whom we are new, we, Katie and I, call it spiritual involution because in order for there to be, must be involution. Involution precedes evolution. And we want spiritual evolution, therefore we are involving ourselves spiritually. Or at least, anyway, don't we?
We try. We make an effort, right?
So how's your world today, Katie Burke?
It's good. It's good. It's sunny out. It's I'm in the woods. Hear the birds. I think we have a little nest with some babies up there. Hear a lot of chirping. Yeah, it's nothing to complain about other than, you know, the stresses of the outside world that I get from social media or other sources telling me that the world is the way it is. But I'm in a bubble.
Yeah, it's good to create a bubble for oneself.
It is. And, you know, I'm thankful I have it and also aware that I'm privileged to have it. And so, you know, it's one of those things that you want to hide, but you also don't want to hide. How are you doing?
I'm out near Stockton, California. I'm out in the Delta. I'm in an RV. And because I'm not in the RV alone, I'm sequestered in a bathroom in the RV, hence the acoustics. And there is a lot of wind and dust and farm activity going on and just across the gravel road.
You're doing this podcast in an RV bathroom. Did I just hear that right? Nice.
Let's be real, right?
That should be our new name. Our new name for the podcast. RV bathroom talk.
Messages from an RV bathroom.
Right.
And right across the gravel road, they are baling hay. And it's so kind of like you. I'm out in the natural world.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of enjoying it. However, it is possible to be even in the thick of it. Like in the cities or where there's a lot of protestations and protestations and activity. It's still possible to be peaceful. I know it is. It's not always easy because it takes a commitment. It takes a commitment that peacefulness is more valuable for one than whatever peace isn't.
Do you think
so? Sometimes I have.
Do you think you're, since we're talking about involution and it's a spiritual podcast, do you think being in peace yourself in this moment helps the greater good? Does it serve beyond yourself being peaceful?
Well, in theory, all the theories point to that. Let me tell you, I've actually noticed that people around me have the ability to alter what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking or what I'm experiencing, just people around me, the way that they are being. So I would answer your question. Yes. Yes. I know that it's possible because I see it with Mauricio, for example. There are times when conversations might be heated between us. And when he lets go of the heatedness and smiles or calls me babe or gives a pet name, all of that energy that was just disappears. Like who he's being impacts me. So yes, Katie, that was a lot of words to answer a question. I could have just said yes.
Do you think it also works reverse? So if we are in a state of amplified anger and hate and discomfort, right? So as a spiritual leader, which you are.
When I was a kid, my mother used to say, misery loves company.
It is a saying. Is that part
Do you remember
of
that? Have you heard it?
Oh, I've heard of that. Is that part of, you think, can you tie that into the science of mind general philosophy of repercussions and what you put out?
Reciprocity.
That's what I was.
Reciprocity.
Yeah.
Sure. What's the question?
I mean, since we're trying, I mean, I'm trying to stay focused on the spiritual end. I mean, I feel like it could go off into so many tangents. In fact, we tried this podcast yesterday and it did go too far off and we deleted it. So I mean, I'm coming back to the spiritual end, and I want to feel like what I am doing is serving a greater purpose than remaining in my bubble and being a source of peace. And what I choose to put out for the public to see or engage with is purposefully peaceful. It's purposefully, not to say I'm not pointing in a direction that I want the world to go in. You know, I definitely have political views. I definitely have ideas, but I try to place them in a field of peace, because ultimately I believe, just like what we're talking about, is that it will ripple forward, and my peacefulness will basically be a contagious thing, right? And it will amplify itself. Whereas if I start the conversation in a state of anger or calling the other side something nasty or not even that, but just stating my point of view in this hostility, I feel like it's then rippling outward from me, aiding in the hostility of which I really don't want to exist. So I don't want to be part of the world I don't want to see. I want to be part of the world I do want to see, which is something that's just, fair, love, understanding, peace, all of these things. And if I cannot be that myself, how am I supposed to expect the world to be that? And how does that come into play with the science of mind, with reciprocity and that whole idea?
Do you mind if I backtrack just a minute?
Go for it.
What's wrong with being in your bubble?
Well, I think for me, I have an issue with seeing something wrong outside my bubble, and knowing I have the ability to be in my bubble, and it doesn't sit right with me to not engage with the world around me in a positive way if I see things that are troubling. It feels selfish, and selfishness to me kind of feels uncomfortable. It doesn't feel like I'm utilizing my time here on earth as a being of love usefully. Is that a word? Usefully? Yeah. You know, so I think I have a little bit of an issue with, I want to remain in my bubble when I need that space to kind of re-energize. If I'm going to the dark side, like I'll retreat into my bubble, but I want to emerge as a light for others to catch to, and to attach my light to other lights so we can shine brighter. I mean, I'm saying all these hippy dippy cheesy things, but in reality, I think that there's actually like a spiritual truth to this that's pretty profound. And you're the preacher. I mean, you're the guy that knows all this stuff. That's why I'm asking.
So I'm learning from you, but from my perspective, the bubble includes the little voice I hear behind you.
Yes. Can you ask Daddy, please? Because I'm talking to David on the podcast. We made it 9 minutes before. Here, go ask Daddy, because I'm on the podcast, love. Remember? Can you go ask him? Well, I'm in the middle of a podcast and I can't pause it. So we're not on the other style where I could pause it and then move on. All right. There we go. I got her to go to Dad. Now I got to run away into the forest. I made myself too visible. I'm not in a bubble enough. Okay. So did you forget your thought?
No, I didn't. Okay. So while you were talking about being in the bubble, I was thinking about the bubble I was raised in. And it was, the street was Toller Avenue in Bell Gardens, California. And it was a total community. My mother and father created a world in our household. And
sorry.
I think it's beautiful.
You're in my world up here.
But the point I'm making is, I exist because the bubble my mother created. And the work that I'm doing and the work that my siblings are doing came out of that bubble. So I was just asking the question, is the bubble, is there something wrong with the bubble? Do you have to venture out?
For me, the bubble is, I have two bubbles. I have an immediate bubble of inside my own body, like the place I go during meditation, or some sort of comfort level that I think I could kind of find some sort of peace anywhere, even if I was in the middle of a protest. I think I've become powerful enough to find peace in that situation. But the broader bubble of then your home, and then there's a bigger bubble of being part of the human race, and then there's a big old bubble of being part of the entire planetary system, the birds, the trees, the earth, and then there's a bigger bubble of the whole universe. And I want to be a positive ripple into the stars.
Okay, good. Let's approach that, because while you were speaking, I was getting experiencing what I call a download. That a lot of the swirling, the vortex of anxiety and anger and upset and accusations and division, it's I'm watching it, and it's very intoxicating and very easy to dive in. But I've noticed something, Katie. It all exists inside of my head. Most of it exists because I have a story about what's going on, because I have a fear about what's going on, because I have an upset about what's going on, because I have an opinion about what's going on. And I'm getting so much in my head that it's very easy to be persuaded to follow the energies of anger and upset. And I'm completely ignoring my body. And my body is all the time telling me the measure of my thinking. I mean, I could literally watch how my body's reacting and see what I'm thinking by the way my body is. And I don't think that's going to benefit a lot of people right now. Wow, none of this is making sense.
Well, I think I get what you're saying. And I feel like you're on an individual level, and I'm striving to find that place between the individual and my place in the broader, you know, scope. But I do agree that there's a connection between perceiving what, you know, the drama and the anger and all that's being pushed into our atmosphere via social media, via the news. You know, it's all coming in, and it does have a visceral effect on your body. That's where I think that inner bubble is really important, that meditation, that place where you can remove yourself and then calmly look at what is really happening and make an opinion. I think it's important to have an opinion, but not based on that crazy feeling that you're describing that makes your body feel yucky. That's not often going to lead you to a rational place. It's often going to lead you down, we've talked about this, a reaction that I'm worried we're heading towards right now without stepping back and slowing down, like you like to say, and really finding that inner peace first. And then you're in a safe place to evaluate the situation and move forward in a way that's not rooted in that very anger that you want to dispel from your body because it's so uncomfortable and not healthy.
I think a lot of our fears right now are not based on reality at all. I think a lot of our upsets are not based on reality at all. They're based on a narrative that is being being broadcast, and we are fishing for it. If one digs even a little bit under the surface, one can find counter points of view for almost every thing that we're reading in the media. And it's a very important perspective for me to get. That a long time ago, the news that we read came from people who were paid to write. So they explored and they were investigative. Nowadays, anybody can submit anything because of the technology we have, which is wonderful. And almost everything is available for free online. So rarely are investigative journals being paid. Therefore, companies that produce news media have to earn money somehow. And the way they do it is by advertising, by clicks. So the more, it doesn't matter if you, I know you, we've said this, right?
Right. Well, interestingly, I just found an article that said that PR firms actually outnumber journalists now, like 5 or 6 to 1. They're actually the one providing the journalist with the story, with the info. And it's, well, a PR firm has a totally different perspective of a story, right, than a journalist would. A journalist is out to try to find the truth, where a PR person is behind a company trying to push a narrative. And so they're starting to collide. In fact, I would say the PR firm element seems to be overtaking the journalist element. So I think it's very truthful to say that you need to be very wary of even mainstream media now, unfortunately, places you think you can trust. There is an agenda. And if you can understand the agenda, you might be able to look at it a little more objectively, at least understanding what's behind it, right?
So why I'm bringing that up, forgive me for stepping on your words, but I know I'll forget it. Why I'm bringing it up is a lot of the compulsions we have to take action is to take action on a narrative that may or may not be entirely real.
Right. But I don't want to undermine the fact that I think the narrative might be pushing something that's not completely truth, but underneath it, I think there is a issue. Predominantly right now, what we're dealing with is the Black community, and they are in trouble. Their community is suffering. And I don't know if the truth of it is really police brutality or if there's something systemic in the police structure that needs to change, or if there's something inside the community of the Black people. And I'm talking and I think it's more socioeconomic, where it's these, you know, I think I told you this yesterday, but I was talking to my friend who's a police officer in the Bay Area. He doesn't want me to tell you, you know, his name or anything, but he says, you know, he looks at these Black people, these Black kids in these poor communities, and he feels like they are set up to fail. He's saddened by what he sees as a police officer with, you know, the gangs around there, the single mothers that are struggling just to make do. I mean, there's something in this system that is broken. I just don't know if we're looking at it clear enough to actually find the answers. And I think the political lines are making it hard for us to come up collectively together with many different solutions. Like, you know, I know we've been discussing the Black conservative point of view, and I actually think they hold something really powerful, but the Democrats don't want to look there because they're the other side. And I think the Democrats hold some interesting ideas as well, as far as progressive things to change in institutions, but the right won't look at them. And I think we're missing the point that if you truly want to help this group of people, that we need to stop with this division. It's not helping. And that's where I'm struggling to find the truth. I think there, underneath it all, there's something that is wrong. I don't know if what we're targeting is right, though.
That to me settles in my body as, yeah, that sounds about right. And with that as a preface from my view as a minister and as a pastor, what I'm doing with that is spending time on purpose dismantling the opinions that are, as they're forming very quickly. When I watch a news piece, or a friend emails, or a text message, or I see something on television, it's very easy for me to immediately develop a conclusion. And what I'm doing right now is being very, very careful not to draw any conclusions, which makes me stutter, because people are like, well, what are you going to do? Well, I have this experience that action without intention is impulsiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
Action without a goal is impulse. And at the same time, having clear ideas without action is either procrastination or blind. However, I don't yet have the ideas that would add to a solution. Any ideas that I have right now are that people want, any ideas that people want me to enact, they are for me impulsive.
Yeah, that resonates with me a lot. I have this feeling where since this started, you know, there's been, the trigger reaction is to jump on board with everything, you know, and go for it. However, I realized I don't know enough. I don't know the history enough. I don't know the politics enough. I don't know what's been passed, what hasn't been passed in the history. And I'm just starting to delve into that pretty deeply. Like every day I'm taking the time to either read a book or listen to somebody who knows what they're talking about, a scholar on the topic, and really like look at it. And I'm starting to form opinions from this, and I'm starting to, you know, figure out how I can be the best ally. Cause I know that's a big word for the white person, is how to be the best ally. And there's a lot of talk about understanding your white privilege. And I think that is very important. I don't know if that is the ultimate answer. It might be a part of it. So I agree, though. I just don't want to just jump on a bandwagon and start yelling and being loud when I'm not sure what I am exactly for yet. I mean, I am for the betterment of the Black community on a whole. Like, I want every Black child to grow up believing they can make it and be something in this world and have the resources to actually do that. I want that. How to do that. And I also, you know, after talking to my friend who's the policeman, I don't think we understand their stories enough. I mean, he's talking to me and he's the nicest guy. And I'm just, you know, I feel like his profession is so misunderstood right now and is being targeted somewhat unfairly. I mean, he's even saying, I believe that there needs to be reform. I believe social workers are needed. We're asked to wear too many hats. It's ridiculous. That this system is in some ways broken and we do need to fix that. But dismantling the police force and making the policeman seem like this evil person is also a problem in my mind. Like, that's not a good route. I don't believe it's a good route. How to fix it, though, is, again, I haven't landed on the solution that I feel confident in being loud about.
So from the perspective of the science of mind, as I understand it, and for everybody who's participating by listening to this, I'm not speaking for the science of mind. I'm speaking my perspective and understanding of it. Sometimes things will cease to exist when we stop blowing life into them. It's like taking a balloon and you blow air into it. It becomes bigger and bigger and bigger because you keep adding life to it. If you let it go and you don't tie a knot in it, it will literally dissipate and disappear.
Right. And that brings us back to the beginning, right? Like, if that's the theory, that's what I wanted to get from the beginning. Like, if that's the theory, if you stop blowing life into something, it'll disappear. The reverse is also true. If you start life into something you want to see, it will appear bigger. It will expand. And that might be the root and why we should stick to the peace, the love, and keep blowing that balloon. Right.
Yeah, because againstness will perpetuate the thing about which you're against. You know, that which right. you resist persists. We've all heard that. But we think, well, what the hell does? While you continue to be against something, you continue to keep it alive. It cannot mm-hmm. die unless you stop giving it life. Now, I don't know how to do that when it comes to racism and brutality. Okay, that's above my pay grade. But I'm just thinking about the ideas of good and evil, of construction and destruction. And my role right now is global transformation. And the route I'm taking is the individual's transformation. So I must keep working on my transformation if the world will ever be globally transformed. It cannot be if the individuals don't do it.
Right. I had one question for you. I agree. Thank you for putting it so nicely in a little box. I like it. So I was thinking, you as a gay man have been, you know, a marginalized group that has also experienced hate on a certain level, you know, not based on your skin color, but based on your sexuality. And I just started going into like the Stonewall riots in 1969 in New York. And it seemed like from that riot, it was violent, but it was for a purpose. It was right against the attackers, which are attacking them, that they produced an organization and went forward with an idea. Being part of that group, and me, for example, being a female who is not gay, who's a heterosexual, how would you want an ally to show up for your group? Like, what in your mind is something, like, if you guys were being marginalized right now, would it be enough for you, for me, who's a good friend of yours, to say, you know what, I'm going to work on myself, and that's how I'm going to help the cause? Would that be enough? Is that enough?
First, I would have been uncomfortable if anybody said, I want to be an ally. How can I be your ally?
Why?
That's kind of odd to me. They're either my friend or they're not my friend. They're either part of my community or they're not part of my community. And stand for me because I happen to be, because of my orientation. That's odd to me.
But would it bother you though if part of who you are is being, you know, victimized by the government, let's say, or is being not victimized, but you're being treated unfairly? Like, I have a response when, like, if a friend of mine is getting bullied,
I never experienced being treated unfairly. Never. Never. What I experienced was I grew up in a world in which the norm was the prevailing and predominant. And I knew that the society in which I grew up said that these two people married is what constitutes this community. And I knew that my orientation was not included in that. I never felt less than. Mostly I felt scared that I would be disenfranchised. Mostly I felt scared like my parents were not going to love me anymore. But I actually was grateful when I found out that I was gay, and I didn't give a shit. I didn't care about the laws about it.
Did it make you feel a certain way though when, let's say, the laws were passed that makes marriage legal? Like, do you have any connection to
No, it made me very scared, actually.
Huh.
And more gay couples broke up because of that.
Huh.
There were plenty of people who were together who were couples, and they said, Well, we would get married if we could. And then when it became legal, they were like, well, the reality is we don't want to get married.
Well, you don't have to get married. It's just nice that you have the option, I would think.
No, but if you've been saying for 20, 30 years, we would get married if we could, and right. Then suddenly you can, you have to look at, do you really want to do that? There's some very interesting things about the period in which I knew that I was gay. We're talking about the late 70s, early 80s. I moved to West Hollywood in 1983, and that was AIDS had just made its way into the world scene. West Hollywood was an unincorporated county of Los Angeles, and that's, by the way, that's where all the nightclubs, you know, you hear about the Sunset Strip, the Whiskey O'Go-Go, and the Roxy. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
So the Sunset Strip in Hollywood, it's actually in West Hollywood, and it included like the Roxy and the Whiskey O'Go-Go, you know, all those nightclubs. And the reason why they were there is because they were out of the jurisdiction of the LA Police Department. They were under county. And that's why a lot of gays tended to congregate there, because they were free from the LAPD. But I moved there in 1983, and in 1984, it voted to become a city. And I remember there was the first gay mayor, yada, 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 yada. I'm bringing that up because the environment was very exciting, but I didn't feel it was exciting because we were overcoming oppression. I felt it was exciting because we were articulating and defining something. We were creating something, not fighting against something.
Right. That's a good perspective. But
so I'm watching right now.
Do you think the person that's supportive of wanting to create, who's not in that group that you're in, that wasn't seen, do you think that person has a role? What I'm trying to get at is, right now we're both in the role that wants to be supportive of the creation of a new change, right? That's better, but also realizes we are not the targeted group. So where? I guess I'm looking from your perspective
I don't think when you say we're not the targeted group, I'm not sure that's so, because
okay,
there are folks who will now target.
Right. We're getting off there. I'm just saying, as a person who wants to support Black Lives Matter, I want the world to be better for Black people. But that's where I'm going to start. We can argue the other things, but as a person who believes that and wants to support that message, what is the best route? Like, how, because what I'm seeing right now is a lot of virtue signaling, a lot of keyboard warriors, which, you know, isn't horrible, but I want to move beyond that. I want to have it come from this place of creation, of love, of truth. Is standing where we're standing right now in that bubble, is that serving that, or or Katie, from your perspective,
Katie,
is there more?
Do you have any idea how many people are against me because I happen to be gay and a pastor? There is a whole world of people who think I'm an abomination. I don't talk about it because I don't care, but I'm answering your question. I don't need you to be an ally. The fact that you are my friend and that we have these conversations shows me that you respect me somewhat, that we have some affinity and affection for each other.
Okay.
That to me is the fact that you even call me, the fact that we even have these amazing conversations and that we love each other's families. That to me is, I don't know. If you ask, how can I be your friend? I'd actually want to be away from you. I think you're kind of creepy. Just be my friend.
Right.
Is that making sense?
So, yeah. I mean, it's maybe we're overthinking stuff too much.
You think?
All right.
Maybe here's what we should do. Maybe we should grab the pillows and go outside and climb into those cardboard boxes with your kids. That might be the best thing you can do as an ally.
So if I gave you one of those BFF necklaces that break in half the heart, would that be... that would be too creepy, or
that's the perfect way to end this conversation.
All right, well, thank you so much for the chat. Hopefully you get to emerge from the bathroom now.
No, because now I've got a Zoom call with the spiritual community of San Jose. We have a daily call, and we've been having that since the middle of March when we went into shelter in place.
Oh yeah, I hopped on it once, but I haven't made it. Well, tell everyone hi for me.
I will tell people you said hello. Give my love to your family. Have a terrific day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye, Katie.
Bye.